ever tried watching your athlete's game from anywhere in the world? With Replayer, you actually can. I had a friend watch his son's game live from his flight. My son watched a live game from the car while we were driving up the California coast. It doesn't matter where you are, grandparents across the country, cousins on the other side of the world, teammates who just moved away, set up the camera, hit go live, and everyone with a link is right there on the sideline. Live streaming is free. Unlimited games, unlimited teams, unlimited users. No complex tiers. Everyone gets access. And forget waiting hours for footage. I recorded a 60-minute game, and it was ready in 5 minutes. Players were clipping highlights on the ride home. One camera, made in the USA, unlimited everything. If you never want to miss those moments, head to replayer.com. The link is in the show notes. Hey soccer friends, I just want to give a shout out to our partner, TeamPlayer. They are changing the game on how you find the perfect soccer team for your player. Parents, this means no more endless social media scrolling to find information on teams. With TeamPlayer, everything you need to know is just a few clicks away. It's simple, straightforward, and lets you find the best coach and team for your player without any of the usual headaches. And coaches, we all know how tough it can be to get your team noticed, but when you subscribe to one of TeamPlayer's team plans, you instantly get access to set up an online team profile that allows you to reach more potential players and showcase what your team is all about. It's super easy and lets players and parents see why your team could be the right fit for them. And if you sign up using the promo code PITCH, you can try any team plan free for 1 month. So whether you're managing a team or searching for one, come on over to www.teamplayer.us. That is TeamPlayer.us. And come give TeamPlayer a look.
Family-owned Soccer Innovation is your go-to source for top-quality equipment. Whether you're a player, a supportive family member, or a dedicated coach, they have everything you need to elevate your game. For players, their innovative equipment are designed to boost your skills and performance on the pitch. From their agility cones to their portable goals, they have you covered. And family members, they offer durable equipment that's built to last because we know your support is critical to your player. Coaches, trust me, they can provide the equipment you need to run effective training sessions and shape the next generation of soccer players. Visit Soccer Innovations at soccerinnovations.com to start elevating your game with them.
And if you use the code PITCH, P-I-T-C-H, you can receive up to 10% off your next order. Hello and welcome back to Chat by the Pitch. This is episode 2 with Dutch FC, and this is with Dennis. Listening to what he has to say and what he shares in this episode is amazing. I know I re-asked a question twice, and as I re-listened to it, I realized I did it. But I think I got two different responses that were phenomenal. I think Dennis did a great job being a great guest and patient with me. But as we dive into this, listen to the things he talks about what we should expect as parents and things to look for. And let's head to the pitch.
So what advice would you advise parents when, if they're looking at you or any other club, would you give them?
It would all come down to what is it you want? What do you want is the key thing. You know, what do you want for your child? You know, so that once you work that out, it's almost like when the question that you ask when your child gets to the point of going to college, do you want to go to a big school where it's just huge and you're just going to be a tiny hand amongst all those people? Or do you want to go to a smaller school? And all of those things are important because it basically is going to come down to your child's personality. Because some kids fit into the big environment. They've got that personality. They're outgoing. They don't really care about, you know, they just jump straight into a team. They don't really worry about those things. And then other kids are a bit more introvert. and want a smaller environment for them to succeed and feel comfortable. So what is it you're after? Is it a big environment or a smaller environment that provides the same thing? Because at the end of the day, we're providing soccer. If you're looking at competitive soccer and competitive clubs, then you know the competitive clubs that you're looking at. So you basically go, okay, which one of these fits my child's needs, my daughter or my son's needs? Is this one too competitive? Is this one not quite as competitive? And is this one competitive but got a real community feel to it where you feel like family as well? Because there are all those different clubs out there. So it's what right. is it that you really want? Because at the end of the day, someone saying, well, I want my child to have the opportunity to play in college or, you know, to make a professional team or a national team, that actually is not a real valid point to be looking at a club for, to be honest, because that opportunity is there for every single child, regardless of what club they're in. That's the truth of the matter. Just because some club might play EPL or NPL or ECNL, you know, or the women's league, the women's academy, it doesn't matter. Because if, for example, my daughter wasn't playing in one of the biggest clubs when I was in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and all I did was basically the friend of mine, he was in one of the big clubs, and I had an opportunity for her to guest play. She guest played with them, and she ended up playing Division I. So you don't have to be in that big environment to have the opportunity. You can go and guest play with any club pretty much in the country. You can go online and look for guest playing opportunities and go play anywhere for a weekend, for a showcase. So it really does come down to what is it you really want for your child, and which one do you think is a real fit for them? And it needs to be really with them. And I'm not sure sometimes if parents actually do have their child make that decision, because generally the child's not going to wake up and go, hey, I want to go and play in that club. It's the parent right. that's probably done. It's the parent that's probably done the research and gone, hey, I want you to, you're going to play soccer and I want you to go here. And generally right. that's generally how it works. And sometimes I always look at it and say, look, if you're going to play soccer and you want to be competitive, or if you don't want to be competitive, either one you choose. You pick the one where I always believe one of the key things is that the coach of your child's team can help you develop. Whatever that level is that they actually can help you develop as a player and as a person. So you're not just basically going to that club because that club's got a big name. The coach of your child's team is really the most important, because that's who's going to be spending most of the time teaching them the game and what the game's all about. So
right.
finding out who that coach is, what they're about, do they fit what you're about as well? Because, you know, again, is it a coach that yells? Is it a coach that says nothing? You know, is it a coach that does a bit of both? Those are really important things to be aware of. And, you know, we're coming up to that time of the year, actually, right now, where, you know, some people, if they've got in their minds that they would like to go to a club, a specific club, it's to just, you know, take some time. Most of them are at the fields already right now, and go watch some of those clubs and see
yes.
are they operating now at the fields, not when you go to speak to them and everything is rosy. Go see what they're doing at the fields. Maybe go look at that team that you're interested in and see what they look like. And then you might get a better idea of if you would actually be a fit with that group. Mingle amongst the parents, you know, as if you're just watching the game, see what it sounds like. So there are lots of things that, again, I think I said before, you take bigger steps in choosing a doctor for your family. You take bigger steps in choosing what school in your district is the right school for your child. Or if those who are well-off or affluent, do I want them to go to private education, you know? And it's funny because in sport, there's not that much effort put into it, but then there's so much impact that comes from not making that effort, because sometimes kids end up all over the place every year or every season. They're moving because they're not happy. And you have to ask yourself, well, why is that? Why did that occur? You know, because if they're moving and moving and moving and moving, what is it you're searching for? is the key thing. So then you, if that was because you didn't do the research of what it is you really think fits for you and your child, then that's sadly what's going to happen. You're going to end up constantly moving, and you're never going to grow. Just keep moving for the sake of it. And eventually what happens is you might lose interest and quit the game altogether.
Yes, I think that's a common theme. Either the parents push them in the wrong direction or they push too hard and they just give up on the game. Now, you hit kind of something. I'm thinking back to what you guys said earlier. It was talking about you guys don't have three teams, you guys have two teams. I think you guys kind of have a good thing going there, where instead of having a coach might have five different teams, but they're in five different age groups. You guys have an older age group and two teams within the same age group, a developmental and I think you guys call them the advanced. And having that option with the same coach even is a huge advantage, because I think Wilco hit on it on the head. If they are struggling that week in practice for whatever reason, you can bounce them down to be the playmaker, and it might reboost their confidence again to go back up and go play in the other squad again. And I've been thinking a lot about that and how in the conversation you just had, if you have the right coach, you just need the right environment to grow. And as a parent, we were told, go chase the coach, don't chase the name on the jersey. Go find a coach, and then everything else will fall in place for your player. Yeah. And we've taken that mentality very seriously to heart in our house, and I think you really hit it on the head there. It doesn't matter what club you're at. It depends on where you're going. So once they do find a coach they like, what questions you might advise them to ask? And is it asking about development, or is it asking in different forms of questions? Or because every parent will ask.
I would say to the parent, what do you want? What do you want? Do you know what I'm saying? Because at the end of the day, I'm going to provide the development. I'm going to also challenge your child. We may not win every single game. So if you're coming in because you want to be on a team that wins every week, and I'm going to tell you straight up, we're not going to win every game. And I'm going to hold your child accountable, which means that your child may not play sometimes as much as you would like, because I'm going to hold them accountable. So these are the questions. What do you really want from a coach? Do you want a coach that says all the right things but doesn't really back up what they say? Or do you want a coach that is straight and you know what you're getting before you go into it? You know, so these are the key things. What style do you play? Are you a defensive-minded coach, or you're an offensive-minded coach? Is there opportunities for us to pick up additional training with another team within the club, an older team, a younger team, a skills coach? These are the things that you're looking at when you want to go to a club, because that one coach may not be able to give you everything, but within the club, you have other tools to pick up some of those things. And that what we said before about playing opportunities, I might play you with the top team today, but then you have an opportunity to play with the second team to get a second game in, to get more touches in later on that day or the next day. So that's just the club opportunity that we're providing there. But I think an honest, straight coach and what style a coach is are key, are kind of important questions.
So along those same lines, do you advise the parents to, you said it, go watch them beforehand and not make an announcement, kind of, because we're in that season right now, so you can see how the coaches. Do you advise them to go to multiple games? Because as a player tries out, I'm hoping your parents are sending their players to multiple sessions with that coach, to see how your player interacts and the coach interacts with your player and how that player chemistry is with the team. Do you advise them also to go watch the coach in more than one game if they have the opportunity to?
Yeah, I mean, I would say you go a couple, you try and do a couple of games, because sometimes, like for example, one of our teams this weekend, I went to watch them, one of our younger teams, and they played a team that was probably the opposition's club's third team or fourth team, for example.
Right.
Well, it to me, it ended up being, I got nothing from that game because our team won about 15-3. So I got nothing as to what that team was. That team, as far as I was concerned, the opponents, is like, I would look at that and go, they're in the wrong place. They probably should be in a recreational setting and not in a big club setting, because that, to me, is like, why am I paying that amount of money to lose to a team that is not that, to be fair, it's not like our team was that much better in that sense, is because we're new, we're less than a year old, that team that I'm talking about. And then I'm right. looking at the opponents and going, why are you guys paying that money? And I know you're paying some money to be in that uniform playing against us, and then I have no clue whatsoever. You're in the wrong place. And these are young kids. They were, what, 7 or 8 year olds. And I'm going, this is the experience that we're giving them. That is not a good place for them.
Right.
So I would then go, okay, that's what I thought about the other team. I couldn't really make an assessment on my team. So I would then go, okay, let me go watch my team again and see when they play somebody slightly better and see how they do. And then I can actually now give a true evaluation as to have they improved since the fall season to now. Do you see what I'm saying? So if you give it at least two games, you're going to get two different pitchers for sure. You generally will get two different pitchers for sure. Obviously, you don't need to be spending your whole season going and watching different teams, because otherwise you might as well become a coach. But if you give it two games, you generally would get a good pitcher for sure. And again, one of the best opportunities is if you're in a tournament. You're pretty much, if you're in a tournament, you're playing against teams in your age group.
Right.
You see, like, for example, when I coach, I'm watching our team and making notes, but I'm also watching the opponents, so I know their players too.
Right.
So I get a picture of that club's team in that age group as well, and the other club and the other club. So I have an idea of who all these people are as I go. I know what's going on, how they play, et cetera, et cetera. So a tournament is usually a really good opportunity, because you're already pretty much giving your life up for that weekend. You're already there.
Right.
Sometimes you get a big break in between games. Hey, and usually someone's playing right before you or right after you anyway. You get to see, or sometimes if you're fortunate, you get games that are going field next to field. And you could actually stand right. between and watch four teams for a spell. And then you actually hear the coaches as well, how they interact and what their reactions are. Because, again, this weekend I saw all styles of different coaching this weekend when I was out watching games. There was coaches that were like the biggest cheerleaders, and it was fantastic because those kids were young and they were excited when they scored. Then you got a coach that was very calm when the kids made a mistake, you know, and then they didn't probably say anything when they probably should have said something. When the kid was a bit down, you could see it. You know, so it's, and then some coaches just said nothing. So they're all different coaches, and it just comes down to, what do you really prefer? What does your child respond to? Does your child, do you want your child to stand there with their hands over their face, upset because they made a mistake and gave up a goal, and there's no response from the coach to say, for example, hey, get your head up, let's move on from that, let's go again? Or do you, you know, so which one do you want? Or do you want the coach that's going to go, hey, you need to wake up, that's not good enough? So there's differing responses, and how that child responds to that coach or that coaching style, you've got to have some kind of awareness of it before you go in.
Yeah, right. I mean, that's key. So I actually thought of it going back a little bit, and I'm sorry to do this to you. So when you talked about your guys' team and having your development and your advanced team, do you guys have other coaches come in from within the club as guest coaches and talk to give them and coach to give them different voices then? Because it goes along the kind of the same philosophy of what we're talking about right now is listening to all the other coaches, trying to find the right one. But sometimes if, let's say you're coaching your team, it's not, whatever you're saying is not clicking, does Wilco come in and try to explain the same thing but from his perspective ever, or come in and give like a special session for your team or anything like that?
Well, generally how we work, and it's actually, it's a competitive team and development team. It's not necessarily that. It's competitive and then development. So, and then I want to clarify that, because I think it's important, because when we say development, it's development in a competitive environment that they have more time to, there's a lot more patience given to them, understanding that they're at that stage of their development.
Right.
But back to the point of different voices. Generally, that's where myself generally comes in as the director of coaching. That's generally where that comes in. There's a couple of things. So I would go to games, for example, and like this weekend I was out watching games, and then I ended up talking to the team at halftime. What I saw in their performance and their attitude, what they can do better, and things they need to change. Do you see what I'm saying? So now they're hearing it from me as the club director, not from the coach. Who, again, it's a good thing, because like you say, sometimes you get tunnel vision. When you're the coach of your team, that's what you see. That's totally, I see this, this, and this. But then a set of neutral eyes can see something different. And so that's where I come in terms of I will go and I will do the team talk, or even sometimes take the team in certain in games. But then I have a different style of coaching when I take the teams. And so then it's important to explain to them, because sometimes, you know, you can go and take a team as another coach, and the kid will turn to you and say, well, that's not what my coach said. and it's really difficult, because that is true. It's like, that's not what my coach says. And so then you have to now be able to navigate that response by basically saying, well, that's fine, but this is what we're doing right now. And how about we take what your coach says and add this to your game as well? So then now the positive part of that is that you're picking up two parts of that scenario. You have two things that you can do in that scenario, though, because that's what your coach says in this situation. This is what I say in this situation. You have two of them. You can choose now, which makes it even better for you. So it's not that it's a negative. It's not a negative thing. It's just different. And then when we have those two team situations, we also, they will train together. We try to have them train together at least once a month minimum, so they get to, all the parents know each other as well, because that's important too, that the parents know the group. So the group, because the parents are an important part, because I always call these things, they're different teams. They're all different teams. There's your coaching team, then there's the players who are a team, then you've got the parents, they're a team. So within one team, you have numerous teams, and it's important that there's a connection within all of them. That's, it doesn't have to be 100%, but it's almost basically working towards that similar common goal and understanding that there's opportunities for us to do things together, to hear different coaches, for the coaches to work together as well and know the group. And then the parents will be around each other, and they'll scrimmage sometimes as well. And then when the opportunity comes for those players, which actually did happen just a few, usually happens around the spring break time, because a lot of kids are all over the place. And with that multi-team scenario, we were able to bring players as guest players to fill rosters, and it was a smooth transition. It wasn't totally new to them, and the parents knew and the kids knew, because they had been working together through the season already.
It kind of goes back to what Wilco was saying the other day, was in our prior conversation, it was how soccer needs to be a community sport, and how where he's from, like they would have, like a concession stand, the club would have their own practice facility, and all the parents would be together and have that community, community aspect of the team, and how it would build upon that. And that's nice to see that you guys are bringing that philosophy even into your club here, the best that you guys can.
Yes, and we're still a fairly new club. And so would we like to be much more super competitive? Is that the right word? Yeah. Would we like to be like much more super competitive, that all of our competitive teams are number one and all those things? No, that is a fact. That doesn't go away. We want that community aspect, but we also want that competitive edge too. So we're always looking of ways to tweak We're still looking at ways of pushing and demanding from all the players and the parents, because we know that, I see the improvement. If you're not within it, it's hard to see it. But I see the improvement, and then I also, Wilco and our head coaches demand improvement on the field, at practices, doing their homework when they have to, you know, with soccer, watching the game. And we're striving to have that scenario where, because I'm not knocking you. Would you like to be in the East? No, yes, we would. Would you like to play NPL? Yes, we would. But, you know, would you like to be state champions? Yes, we would. Because if you don't have those aspirations, then you should be playing rec.
Right.
So
you've got it for the next big thing.
Yeah, so it's like, but we're patient with it. We understand what we're trying to achieve, and it doesn't happen overnight. And that's one of the big things is with Dutch FCs. There is that overall patience.
Which is so important with youth development today. It's something that, in my personal opinion, as a parent watching the United States soccer, there's a lot of development out there, and these kids are doing a lot of incredible things, but the overall development of the sport is lacking, and this is just my opinion, and you're seeing pockets of it growing, and I think it goes back to what you guys talked about, is that we should have 200-plus clubs in the Metroplex area, so it does create that competitiveness, so it does foster that relationship of development, and when you develop, you foster that relationship with winning then, and we're missing that, and it's about, unfortunately, who's bringing home what medal for the weekend, or who's winning what match versus not falling down and hitting rock bottom and working your way back up. I mean, there's some clubs here that are in the Metroplex that are doing a phenomenal job. I've started to do more research about you guys, and in my research, you guys are seeing the progression of moving towards the top of the brackets, if not already there in some of the age groups. And it takes time, it takes patience, and I think that's what we're missing in the United States soccer community culture, is patience.
Instant gratification is what we need.
Right. Yeah. And as you pointed out earlier, it's when the lights come on, and a little Johnny's lights might not come on until he's 14 years old, or it might be they come on when he's 8, and they fizzle out, unfortunately, when he's 12, and it's because of the path that he was on, because of parents or following the flow of soccer, the U.S. soccer model, is gone. So now that being said, I know that when I was taking my coaching licensing, the U.S. soccer model was the Dutch soccer model, play, practice, play. And how does that apply to your club then? Since you're director of coaching, do you guys follow more of the U.S. soccer mentality of play, soccer, play, or do you guys truly coach based on the players on the pitch at the moment?
Well, we always keep that aspect in mind, you know, the play, practice, play. But the ultimate truth and reality is you have to focus on the players that you have. You know, because, and at the end of the day, there's this passing and your skills are always, always at the forefront. They're just always at the forefront. Can you pass a ball? Can you control a ball? Can you dribble a ball? Once you have those aspects, okay, you've got some. That's a good foundation to always keep topping up every session and demanding it every single game. Then you want to play. Obviously, you want to be playing so you can put those things into practice in a game situation. And then once you start to do that in the game situation at practices, now you start throwing in your tactical aspect as well to go with that. So then now I'm having to make these decisions on the fly that are relative to the overall game. But sometimes, you know, you get coaches and you go, okay, I need you to play in this shape and do this in transition and out of transition. And then they have all this jargon in their heads now. But in the meantime, you look at them and you go, well, your kid can't pass the ball. And they can't control the ball.
Right.
You've got to always start from that basis, because I've seen it in numerous situations. Even I see it in the professional game at different levels where these people are trying to play out of the back and they're getting stifled by these teams, and then they'll give up a goal and it's like, okay, now at that level, they're going, well, you're going to have to deal with that because that's what we're going to continually do until you get it right. But again, even at that level, I guarantee you, if you watch the rest of the Premier League season coming up, some of those teams that were playing at the back in the beginning, that are in the bottom seven of relegation, they won't be doing that. They won't. They'll be knocking that ball for survival.
Right.
But the reality is, you may not have been in that survival position, as you just noticed that that's the strength of your team and your players in the beginning, and just play to your strength. Soccer is not meant to be played in one way. If we look at the cultural shifts in soccer over many, many years, it's changed. And some of it you kind of go, what did it change for? Okay, so goalkeepers can't pick the ball up now like we used to back in the day when you pass it back. Okay, so you can't pick it up. Now they've got five subs in the games. All right, so off a game now is with off a team, basically. So is that made it really any better? The systems of play. Okay, we're going to play three in the back. We're going to have, you know, two outside mids going up and down, you know, at wing backs, and then we're going to have three up front. It's, but all systems, whatever they are, they all fall back into the basics of pretty much a 4-4-2 at the end of the day. Or when you're attacking, it's a 4-1-5. Or when you're defending, it's a 5-1-4. It always goes back into those pockets because the game is the game. No matter what anybody wants to say, the game is the game. And you just got to always remember, you've got to be flexible in what it is you're doing. But if you're not coaching your players based on what their capabilities are, then you could be doing them a disservice and the whole team ends up them being in the wrong place because you've just jumped the gun. You can't skip what's required, the basic foundation. Always. It's always that. And so that's what we do. We focus on, all our teams are different. They've all got different personalities. Yes, we love our philosophy and we believe in it. And we try to adhere to it as much as possible, but you have to also remember everybody's individually different, so you have to have the ability to recognize that and coach them accordingly.
You guys, that's what I like to hear. You guys play according to the players, not go in with your mindset set on one thing. It's always how to adapt for your team, which is missing. I feel like it's missing because you have big clubs and small clubs have the same problem. They have a few coaches that want it done their way only, and that's how they're doing a coach. And if you don't like it, go find a new team where if you truly care, like from the sounds of it, and you guys have talked about it, if you guys really care about the development, you adapt and help them shape who they need to be based on their strengths.
And like I said to you before about development, what is the success of development? And I sometimes think that is one of the key things to always look at. If I see, which I have this year, if I see the same kids back in the club in a year, that was successful development for us as a club and for them as individuals and families. Because they've come back, which means that they still are enjoying and wanting to come back to play. And they're getting what they need. And they trust what we're doing. Now, if they come back for the second year, and when you start having kids within your club for 3-4 years, and it's not all based on winning trophies, that tells you a lot.
Right.
That tells you a lot. And, you know, we've got teams where we've had kids that have been in the club for that length of time and more, and it's not necessarily because they've been winning all the trophies, but what they're getting fulfills the overall package, you know, their soccer needs and their personal needs and the culture of the club. So that's successful development. So, and that's before we really get to the point of where we really start to have some trophies. If we win trophies, if our club teams win trophies right now, which they started to do, it's a major thing. Because then you're now starting to see, oh, now we're having some success here with this. Even if they're in the finals, it's a massive thing now. We're going, hey, we're doing we're doing the right things, we're going in the right direction, and we're still keeping these players. And that's how we want to continually grow, because, you know, we want to grow at the right pace too, because you can't outgrow your coaches. That's the right. Next thing. You know, we don't want to become a club there. We've got coaches with 5 teams and stuff, because that's just like, I don't care who you are. It's the hardest thing in the world to try and say you're going to be that focused coach in 5 different teams. There's just no way. It's your heart, because now it just becomes you're a machine now. Next practice, you're just a machine. You're just out there, just running around crazy, and it's not good for you. And I said, you know, I remember one of these things I wanted you to understand this, and it could be used for parents and coaches to look at this. I coached in Albuquerque, and we had this big park. It was called the Balloon Fiesta Park. It's where they host the biggest balloon fiesta, the biggest balloon show, I think it's in the world, every year. But when they weren't there, they would let all the clubs in Albuquerque use that venue for their practices. So pretty much all the clubs were in the same place, practicing every night. And we had clubs, and I'd say this to coaches and to parents, says, you guys actually practice across the pathway from us. It's just across the path. It's not even a road. You practice across the path. So you're on that piece of green grass across the path. You guys wear a different colored uniform to us. And the coaching is there. And you guys pay $1,000 to $1,500 more to be on that patch of grass over there. And you're the third team. And we don't have a team in that age group. Why wouldn't you come to this patch of grass to play for thousands of $1,500 less?
Right.
And they would look at you and they'd like, well, yeah, that makes sense. And I'm like, I know it makes sense. I said, I know it makes sense. I'm like, you are paying, and here it can be $2,000 more to do that. And then you kind of go, when you look at it from that perspective, you start to realize that people sometimes are making decisions based on the crest that club wears, or the name of that club. Because you can't tell me if someone says to you, hey, you can get this TV for your house for $2,000 less, that you wouldn't get it. And it's the same quality. It's the same TV. I'll give it you for $2,000 less. You'd snatch it. But these parents are willing to pay when you work it out. If you say, even if you say it was 5 years, they're willing to pay $10,000-$12,000 more to get to be the third team over there, rather than being the only team over here. And you're doing the same thing. It's not nothing. Right. It's just that when we finished talking last time, I remember that conversation, and I thought that's a good way for people to start looking at it, because it is true. And you have to ask yourself, well, yeah, why do I do that? And that goes back to the point of, we should have 200 clubs in the area, because there is no need to be paying $2,000-$3,000 to be the third team in a club just because you're in the third team in the club. What is that? Why wouldn't you want to just be the Why wouldn't you want to be the first and only team in another club?
Right.
That's
a great answer. So what is the ratio for clubs, the coaches to teams then in your club? Or coaches to age groups? Two teams?
Two teams. Yeah.
Two teams. We
try to basically, and we, you know, because Wilco has also been aware, so he doesn't want it to become where it becomes their... It doesn't become their business. So once you start there, you got in 4 or 5 teams, it's your business, it's your livelihood. You're looking at it from a different perspective now.
Right. I know a coach that has 60-something girls that he coaches, and like, how do you spend any quality time with them on the weekends? Because, I mean, if they're under, let's say they're playing 7v7, I mean, that's like, 7 kids, you need a roster of 10, that's 10 teams. As they get younger, I mean, if you have a bunch of 4v4 girls, you're talking maybe a roster of 6 or 8, and you're still talking a ton of even more teams. I mean, it just blows my mind. And this is something I think parents need to realize. That's a question they need to ask. Like, how many teams are you coaching? And if so, is it one team that you divide up into two? Is it one team that you're planning on building to take 11v11 eventually? And that's something that when I coached, like, we would always plan for the next stage. So we had a roster of 14 kids, but we divided them up, or I think it was 13 kids, because it was 6 and 7, was the rosters for the two teams. And the whole point of it is when we went 77, we had enough kids to go, and kids tend, I mean, the ratio of kids sizzling out, or whatever the case may be, at least when you went 77, you had a roster of 13 kids that gave you 5 kids. And you can still do two teams. So when you go 9v9, you had one team. When you finally hit 11v11, even with a roster of 13 kids, you had two subs. And you can just build upon it. And then you're not having a bunch of kids sitting on the bench. And that comes back to the kids. Do you guys focus on the competitive team? Do you guys focus more on minutes for each player? Or do you guys focus more on the outcome of the match? Are you guys still focused on giving every player a chance to play, or is there a method as they progress through the age groups?
Well, every child has the equal opportunity to play. There's no question about that. Now, what they do with that will determine basically their playing time, and their playing time is also not just predicated on what they do at the game. It's also predicated on a commitment to practices too, and to team functions and things like that. But we all know there's a reality that every single team has its top players.
Right.
And so I've always said to people that there comes a time, even when you're in a development stage, there comes a time where you have to make that choice. It could be a cup final. It could be that they're on the brink of winning their first game in the league, where you may not play a couple of kids. You may have thought about bringing them on in the second half, but you're winning 1-0, you're winning 2-1, and this result is a result that could actually turn the season for the whole team. There's none of this fluffy stuff of like, oh, everybody gets 25. No, that's not what we're about. We're not trying to go all fluffy, because I don't believe in all that. But what we are trying to do is develop them. And sometimes, sadly, it's happened where we've won a game, and maybe a child hasn't got to play in the second half. You got to be aware of that too, because then you've got to talk to that child and make sure that they feel, look, this is how the game was going. I just couldn't get you in. It just wasn't the game for me to do what I've been doing in the past. So today, just understand that's what it was. And but that will be okay if you've actually also had these conversations with the parents, like I said, earlier in the season. So if this does occur as a now and then, you know exactly, genuinely, it's not a BS thing, it's a genuine explanation. Because I've had this with people, and I said, look, it's more important sometimes to have that result for the team rather than to lead the field and go, well, all 15 players got their 20 minutes and we lost. And I've had these discussions with people, and it's like they have to, if they don't get it, then sadly they never will. But that is the truth of the matter, that there comes a time where you need to win this game, and making a lot of changes may not be the answer to make that happen. And once you've won the game and everybody's celebrating, everybody feels great, it's a different feeling. Now they know what winning is about, and that's a part of development, because a lot of the time when you talk about development, you could be developing and losing. So you should, as a coach, you have to also be mindful that it's an opportunity to win, then we got to jump on that, you know? And an example of that was, we have a team that is playing in the JCL, a younger team, and they played the whole fall season and didn't win a game. didn't win a game. And there was some, you know, the parents were all, maybe this, maybe that, what do you think? And then we as coaches, as a coaching team, were like, well, what do you think? Should we put them back in it next year in the spring? In the fall? Yeah, in the spring? What do you think? And he's like, well, and then we came to the conclusion, let's put them back in. Because we've just taken this team on, let's put them back in, let's make them work harder, and let's challenge them and see where they go. Well, they've gone back into it, and they've tied, I think, their first three games. They haven't won yet. And I said to them the other day when I had them, I said, great game, great result. And they went, yeah, but we still didn't win, coach. And I'm like, yeah, you didn't lose. You didn't lose.
Right.
So we're getting there. We're going in the right direction. So, no, it's playing time is obviously important. It's playing time. My philosophy is playing time is earned. You have to earn that. And that's all about your attitude and how you perform. And if you work hard, and always tell kids, work hard. That's the very first thing I'm asking of you. I'm not asking you anything else right now. Work hard. Because you can't, right. That costs you nothing. Really, at the end of the day. So you work hard, you listen, and good things will happen. You start there. Then you get opportunities to use your skill, make decisions, and all those kind of things. But you got to start out by working hard. And if all the kids work hard, generally, you get over a season, your playing time, if you've selected your team right, over a season, your playing time will equal itself out in the end. And you just got to hope that.
Yes,
naturally. So you just got to hope that people don't jump the gun, and you know that's where it goes. That's where it gets a bit messy sometimes with teams where the parent thinks that my child should be playing. Well, no, not be a bit patient. And if they're not patient, sadly, I've seen those faces of those kids where they end up taking them out of the club. The kid doesn't necessarily want to leave. The kid's fine. But the parents peeved.
And right.
And it's tough. And I know it's tough as a parent. Being a parent, you want your kid to play. I understand. But it's the overall, the long-term goal that's more important for your child, I believe.
So that sounds like, if you're talking, if you have 15 players, that sounds more 11v11. So, but at the younger ages, 9v9, 7v7, 4v4. Is it playing time more focused on development on the teams, or if the competitive team is more competitive and the development competitive team more focused on equal playing time and getting those touches in the game so they're ready when they advance to the next competitive team, they're ready to go?
Yeah, definitely in the younger ages, that is, there's no real excuse to just say, hey, in you go, unless they like literally go out there and they're just picking daisies or just twiddling their thumbs, then that's different, you know. But we've had all that. But no, generally in the younger ages, yes, go play. And hopefully you've got roster sizes that do not hinder you from, if you're 4v4, you carry six maybe, or seven at the most, because kids get sick. And pretty much just go, everybody's playing. Off you go. But definitely in those ages, because once you do get to the 11, even 9v9 to be fair, you're getting 99. You're starting to really look at those competitive elements more and more. But then also, because the way it is here, you can actually spend more time in the smaller numbers game as well. You don't have to jump so quickly to 11v11, because that's another aspect with some teams when they play. They decide they're going to play up, and they play up in age, and they go play up in numbers. Sometimes people don't realize that if you jump from, I'm going to jump from 4v4 to, I've got 15 kids and I'm going to go 9v9. Well, you just skipped a whole couple of years of development.
Yes.
You know, in terms of field size, you know, I said to somebody this weekend, another coach, I was just watching our game, but I turned around, they looked as if they were around 2013s or 12s. And at one point, every single player, apart from one goalkeeper, was in one half of the field. And it didn't look too big. It didn't look the wrong size. And I turned to Kurt and said, if you just put a goalpost just over the halfway line, you've got the perfect size field there. And he just right. he laughed. And I'm like, well, yeah. I said, but their real game was a full field.
Right.
And I'm going, so I'm like looking at that and going, if they played in this size field, imagine how much better they would all be, because they would have more touches, there'd be more involvement with the game based on the size of the field. But when they suddenly spread out and were going full field, it was miles apart. It took them 5 minutes to get from one end to the other.
Right.
So there's all that, there's loads of aspects.
Going back, you guys, you talked about touches and everything and passing. Now, some clubs have camera systems, some clubs have someone actually sits down and does statistics for the game. Do you guys track that and figure out where you guys are progressing statistically as a team, or do you guys just do it by feel?
Generally feel, but we also have teams that do the VEO, the video, the games.
Right, VEO and trace and all that.
Yeah. Yeah, so there are a few teams that are invested in that, and they try to share that with other teams if other teams want that. We do a lot of film reviews, so game night reviews. So you watch, they played the game, then we sit down on a Wednesday and say, okay, we're going to have a game night, and that game night is to go over the points of that game so they can see, you know, how they performed and where they can you can make changes. Because sometimes when you're telling the player something, and we all know this, that wasn't okay. Well, and you go, okay, in the 51st minute, look, this is you biting your nails as they run past you. Oh, my bad, coach. And so we all know visual is a great teaching tool. Visual is one of the best tools ever to visualize and watching. So yes, that is what we generally do, but a lot of it is, again, there is a feel. We're not at that point. It'd be great to have all of that, you know, this new technology that's out there now. We're not at that point yet. Sometimes some of our teams, they get financially in a position where they can, like I said, with the videoing of games, we would like to get more of our teams with that opportunity because I think it's really important. But generally, it's a feel. And if I go to watch games, and I generally can see what we need to be working on from just watching the teams play.
And now, coming from the parent perspective, do you guys look for sponsorships for the players, then help reduce costs for the players so you guys can do more with the funding that you guys have to kind of make it less stressful for families and less stressful for you folks running the club? Or I know that you guys have made a great emphasis before on you have some great volunteers and great people behind the scenes that help keep the costs down.
Well, yeah, that is one of the major things that we have. And it also makes them feel a part of what it is we're doing. But the way our costs work, we kind of almost look at that pretty much. Every kid, for example, who plays, if they're in the select program, I think it's 11v11, once they get select, 9v9, 11v11, but they're in select. I think it starts at 2011. The fair fees are pretty much already a scholarship, because their fees are $1,600 to $1,900 for everything, right, as the club fee, right? And so when you start to compare that with other clubs, okay, you start to realize that you're already saving generally about $1,500 just from that alone. So it's we base it from that perspective. Now, we would not be turning down sponsorship opportunities, but like I said, we class ourselves in a position that our fees are so low in comparison. Our academy fees are very comparable to every other club's academy fees. It's like $100 a month, you know, to get coaching and a couple times a week in a game. So there's not much room there to offset any other fees, and the coaches still get a stipend from that as well, which is pretty good. And if players do come in and, for example, and really struggle to pay, because you have families that financially, no matter what you say that fee is, you might say, well, that's a $1,500 lesson over there. They're going to look at you and go, well, I haven't even got that. So
right.
that So that's when we have a discussion, and we would then say with the coaches and the families, hey, how can we make this work? So it's always trying to make it work within the club. And if sometimes you do get some great families that do help sponsor players, something towards the players. So, but right now we're not a club that is full of financial sponsorship. It's more community volunteer based right now, which helps us do what we do.
And that's key. I just ask just because my brain goes there. I know that some clubs will go find local sponsors for tournaments so they can go travel out of state or mm-hmm. out of just a different city in Texas, because I mean, sometimes it's like going to a different state. a six-hour drive down to Houston to go play in a tournament.
Yeah, I know.
It gets costly. And so now, education for your coaches, do you guys have help with that? Do you guys do constant research to help your coaches progress, give them ideas and lesson plans, not so much they have to follow, because we talked about that earlier. Like we said, it's about the team that they have, but just general guidance. Like I've seen work in the past for passing or finishing drills or whatever it may be, or bringing out of the back drills. Yeah. You guys share that information consistently throughout the club so everyone has a chance to hear what everyone has to say and share? Or is it kind of bring the knowledge together and disperse what we have and then figure it out? Or does coaches just are kind of on their own?
Well, we try not to micromanage our coaches. We set them up in the beginning for success, in the sense of what they need to do and be ready, that having a good team manager, because they're like gold. Team managers are, I think, so underrated, because not many successful coaches go without having a good team manager. That's one thing I do know. But when I see that, we as a club, we are part of what it's now called Play Metrics. And the Play Metrics system is where a lot of our registration and all those things go through. Messaging for the teams and coaches and staff. Within that Play Metrics system, the beauty of it is it also comes with hundreds of various different topics for varying ages. And then right now, our man Wilco, he's had it a load of different topics that he's found successful for specific things, if it's passing or movement and things like that. And he's added those videos to the Play Metrics system. And what we do is we try to steer our coaches to basically, they have it at their fingertips that any given day they're going out to a practice, they can click on their phone the Play Metrics, because they're registered into it, and see whatever topic is they want to actually go out and try to perform that day for their teams, whether it's passing, dribbling, shooting, like you say. So we have all of that on hand for our coaching staff through the Play Metrics system. Then we also have the opportunity, we're now putting our coaches through the license, pushing them to go through the USSF licensing program to become better coaches. And the incentive that they have is that, look, the club will reimburse you once you complete successfully that course. And so we just, like I said, we've got a group of young coaches right now, and the beauty is they're not just young, they're young and actually enthusiastic to want to learn and become better. So now they've just gone through all the grassroots coaches courses on USSF, and then we just had three coaches complete their D license, and it seems like it's nothing, but these licenses have become like almost getting a degree now. They're so out there. It's to when we did ours.
You like 24 weeks now, I think.
Yeah, it's a long process. So they've just done that, and so from there we've got three that just come through there. We've got another three that are getting ready to start again with the next round of D's for May, I think it is. And then once they completed that within a year, they would then be eligible. And the hope is that we will get another of those six, if we can get four of those six to want to push on again and go for the C, then that's fantastic. And so they have the support to go as far as they want with their licensing, because the club will reimburse them, because it benefits everybody within the club to have more licensed coaches, and it benefits the teams and it benefits them individually. So, yes, they do have access to lesson plans on Playmetrics, and they have an opportunity. And, in fact, it's an opportunity, but we're also pushing kind of demand that they actually do definitely do the D licenses as a basic requirement.
Even with U.S. Soccer, they have game plans and all that fun stuff in the background. I don't know. A lot of families won't know that if you're never taking your licensing. I did my academic grassroots. They had everything from 4v4 to 11v11 for practice planning, which was phenomenal to see that U.S. Soccer put that out and did a good job.
There's so much information out there. But, and again, it's that balance, and it's kind of where I come in and where Wilco comes in. Because, you know, Wilco will see teams out there training it sometimes when he's out there. So we keep an eye on our teams to make sure they're not, like I said to you earlier on, why are you working on bicycle kicks, for example? You know, what are we doing bicycle kicks for when they can't pass the ball, you know?
Right.
So trying to also nudge them and say, hey, this is what I saw with your team on Saturday or Sunday. And being honest with you, they're struggling to pass the ball and get out of pressure. So this is what I would recommend you do. Or I would take a session and do it and run them through it so they see it. But this is what I recommend you focus on. Because that is something else also, that there's so much coaching out there, coaching information out there. Sometimes, like I said, people get lost and think, I've got to do this on a Tuesday and I've got to do this on a Thursday. Well, really? Do you have to? There are some little things that you need to keep reminding, but repetition has always been proven to be one of the best forms of getting it right.
Right.
So don't jump off, don't jump away from passing and then go, oh my God, we've got to do defending on Thursday. Well, you know, if you could pass the ball better, you might actually do less defending. So it's understanding that what is it you want to work on for a period of time and master that, because that's that patience. Let's master this part first. You can still touch on those basic aspects, but you've got to master something, and then we can move into, okay, now let's look at this. Let's touch on this a little bit. Can we add this into this? Yeah, okay.
Right.
Now we can put a few weeks of this into that. Boom, boom. So when you talk about development, if you were really doing it properly, you know, you're talking about, it's almost a whole year as a starting place. It's an whole year as a starting place before you really start to even have that foundation. So now when I go into year two, we're doing the technical work, we've got the skills, we've got the tactical understanding of where we're supposed to be in relation to the ball offensively and defensively. We've got that down because we've worked on it, we've walked through it, and we've done a shadow play through it.
Right.
Now you're going, okay, that was a whole year because you didn't rush through it. You had to be more patient to get these points over and get them over in game situations and practices. Now we've just done that. Hopefully we've pretty much kept our team together, majority. And now we're going to really start to push on again the following year. And that is when you start, that's when you start to see these teams that have become dominant over time because they've stuck together and this, they've basically bought into that is true development and not just ran off because, oh, that we lost four or five games, shouldn't be losing to them. Well, we're still in this process. This is our first year. There's so much more we've got to get planted into their minds for them to understand, and then you got to hope they can execute it come game time, and that is when you realize one day when you're out there at the sideline and you're chit-chatting and all of a sudden you hear the ball bouncing around, ping 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 ping, and there's a good shape and there's a good movement and now they're communicating, and you go, wait a minute, it was this team, and then you go, oh, the lights come on.
Right.
So
it's amazing that, when that finally happens.
Yes, that's the beauty, that's the ultimate goal, dream of a coach, like, ah, yes. But now it just gets easier. That's the part that people don't realize. Then it becomes really easy.
I heard recently it's easy to play soccer. It's hard develop the player. And I'm like, huh. Like, through our conversation, I actually understood what he was saying. It's like, you can teach someone to play soccer. It's to teach them to develop so they can play soccer is the hard part. Yeah. And the mindset, and that was the big conversation we were having, was about mindset. And with the mindset you guys are having, sounds like you guys aren't just building the actual player. And from our previous conversation, you guys want the whole player. You guys just don't want the soccer player. You want the player that can be successful outside of soccer and and later on.
So they go together.
They do go together. It's hand in hand. So now I'm going to completely change gears so I can give you back your time. Time is the one thing we can't get back in life. I always ask coaches or players, who is your greatest influence as a player? And now as a coach, on the other half of that, who is your greatest influence as a coach? And
so my greatest influence as a player was a player called John Barnes. John Barnes used to play for Watford, England, and Liverpool. One of the few black players back in the day that played. So, and then the way he played the game with a lot of flair, always had a smile on his face, and was very skillful and worked hard. So he was one of my heroes growing up. As a coach, I didn't really pay that much attention to a lot of coaches back then, but there were a couple that I liked, but it was I liked for different reasons, because there was a lot of cultural reasons. So one of the coaches I liked was Bobby Robson. That was again England, and I think he did Barcelona and Newcastle, and he was the coach of my son's. He actually brought my son to Newcastle, and I loved his personality. He's very calm. He gave players an opportunity to play and develop young players, because he signed two of the youngest, highest transfer players. Ronaldo, the former Brazilian player, he signed him for $5 million, and he signed my son, Jermaine, for $5 million. They were, at the time, they were the two youngest teenagers for $5 million. And then there was another gentleman, his name was Ron Atkinson. And he was the West Brom manager. And at the time he was at West Bromwich Albion, he actually had one of the few teams that had three black players playing at the same time. It was Cyril Regis, Brendan Batson, Laurie Cunningham. And I'll never forget it, because it was like such a rare thing to see players of color back then. But those three were on the same team. One was a right back, one was a center forward, and one was a right winger. And they were top players. So I was really just happy that there was a manager that was brave enough to do that. And I used to love watching them because they had a lot of flair. But my coach now, that really influences me, even though sometimes he annoys me because I'm thinking, what are you doing? But I think he's just brilliant, is Pep Guardiola. You know, that is one of my, I'd love to meet him and talk, pick his brains, because he just has a, sometimes it's a bit too much. I think he gets bored sometimes and just tries different things. But he's been phenomenal over the years. You know, one of the first coaches, obviously Spain did it in the World Cup where they didn't play with a center forward, but he stuck with that philosophy for many years, didn't play with a striker until now. He's got Ireland, obviously. But no,
right.
Pep Guardiola, his persona, all about him and the way that his teams play, even though they can be annoying, but that's that belief that we talk about. He believes that is the way we are going to play regardless, and he did it. And even when he didn't win the Premier League in the beginning, he stuck by it. And then he had the players that had the ability to make it happen, and then they stuck by it until they won it. And now they've won the Premier League 4 out of 5 years, and now they're pushing on to win the Champions League, hopefully this year at last. But I just love the way that he carries himself and the way he manages his players and the way they play. So he's my current coaching hero.
As we finish up episode 2 with Dutch FC,
I fall in love with every one of these clubs for different reasons. I fell in love listening to Wilco and Dennis talking about their experience and how they view club soccer in the United States and the area, and how competitive we can make soccer here and make it not so much of a big pay-to-play system as it can be. Now, that being said, they hit on so many different topics and so many different great things. So I hope you gained some love and appreciation for who Dutch FC is, like I have. Until next time.